Buddha, Sri Dharma, Sri Sangha. The fourth law of the universe says that, in River Master's really wonderful expression of it, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails, no matter how long it takes. And River Master presents this way of expressing it as an explanation of the fundamental meaning of laws of Dharma, which is the traditional way it's expressed, laws of truth. Well, here's a very deep truth indeed. And fortunately, it's not just something that one has to take on faith. You know, one can prove it true for oneself. I've said that the five laws of the universe, like the four noble truths and the five columns and the five ranks, all these teachings, they can't be taken piecemeal, one in abstraction from the others, and be understood with any real depth. And this is certainly the case here. Without the understanding of karma and rebirth, this would be simply a kind of wild expression of, or an expression of a kind of wild faith, or perhaps a desperate faith, some might think it, to say that without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. Certainly, if you look in the world, it doesn't always seem that that's the case, depending on what one considers evil, of course. But there are certain things that any sane person recognizes as evil in any culture. Certain actions which are just obviously wrong. You have to be a kind of moral idiot not to see that they're wrong. Cruelty, you know, is obviously wrong. Delighting in pain and destruction is obviously wrong. Doing actions which give pleasure to oneself but at a great expense to others, that's obviously wrong. So let's assume that for a moment that we know what evil is. Well, if you look, you know, at there seem to be many people who live a very evil life and then one day die peacefully in their sleep. At least from a, I'd say from a viewed from a distance. I don't think it's you viewed close up. I don't think it's a peaceful death in the true sense of the word, nor was it a pleasant life. When we act out of greed, hate, and delusion, we increase our load of karmic pain and confusion. If we live a life that increases the load of pain and confusion rather than decreasing it, if we live a life that doesn't have much merit, then when we die, that load of pain and confusion gets picked up by another being or other beings. And this continues until that load of pain and confusion, which I often call spiritual need, till that need that's within it is met. So one has to take the long view to comprehend this law of the universe. You can't just think in terms of one lifetime. For any one of us, if we train diligently, it can be true in one lifetime. If all the karmic need is met, is resolved, find its resolution. If all the pain and confusion find peace. In other words, if the help of the Eternal is able to get at all that need, then it does not have to be passed on. And instead, what is passed on is a great preponderance of merit. If conversion happens like that in any lifetime, the conversion of greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom, then that person's life, that being's life, is proof that without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. But perhaps we need to think for a moment what the vanquishing of evil means. It's obviously more than just like a destruction of evil. Because if you do something in a destructive way, well, it creates more karmic jangles. And those karmic jangles then embody more of the need. So the vanquishing of evil can only really happen through conversion. Ultimately, you could say the ultimate vanquishing of evil. Really, I mean, there's another. This is at the deepest level. At another level, you know, we all know that people who think they're kind of getting away with things don't really get away with them, and that kind of willful evil action is a kind of stupidity, spiritual stupidity. That is self-defeating. And there's many, many examples, you know, of this. And you know, a person who steals not only tends to end up in jail one day, but really is stealing from themselves. You know, you wouldn't do that if you knew better. And so there's a kind of, that might be said to be the minor sense in which evil is vanquished and good prevails, because evil is self-defeating. But there's a deeper sense, and that is embodied in the understanding of conversion. The greed, hate, and delusion can be converted. Now, if we think in those terms and we compare this law of the universe, which is the fourth law of the universe, with the fourth noble truth, what is the fourth noble truth? The noble eightfold path, the way to the cessation of suffering. Not only the way to the cessation of suffering, the way to perpetuate the cessation of suffering, the way not to create more the spiritual need through non-perceptual action, through selfish, willful action. So what is the Noble Eightfold Path talking about in terms of our karmic need? It's talking about conversion. And there's a way to look at the Noble Noble Eightfold Path, which is the more normal way that we look at the Noble Eightfold Path. These are aspects of training that help kind of calm the flames of passion and bring us into harmony with our true nature. And that way of doing it emphasizes what we do. But there's another way to view the Noble Eightfold Path that emphasizes what the Eternal does. It's just like the precepts, where there's a way of viewing the precepts which emphasize our effort, and then there's a way of viewing the precepts that emphasizes the help that the Eternal gives us. In the latter, the precepts become the description of following the Eternal, this description of what it is to follow. Well, let's turn what it is to follow on its head and say what it is to be led by. When you talk about following, we emphasize our effort. But when we talk about being led by, the deeper truth is revealed. The Eternal shows the way. And that's the way the Noble Eightfold Path is too. You can talk about just pick one step at random here, you know, meditation, you know, in terms of your effort to meditate and to really learn to meditate and to get meditation into your blood and bones, you need to practice it, and it's hard work. That's one aspect. But you can also talk about meditation in terms of the call from your heart and responding to the call from your heart, being drawn in, naturally being drawn in, taking refuge in your true nature in response to its lead, to its call. I used to say a lot to the congregation here, I'd say, you know, there's a time when you meditate, and there's a time when the Eternal meditates you. There isn't any nice, neat way of saying this that I know of. It's when meditation just happens of itself, and you're drawn along with it. Sometimes one aspect is emphasized in our experience. Sometimes we're more aware of one aspect than the other. And they're always present. There is always help and need in this dance, you see. In this dance. There's always help and need in relationship to one another. The lesser truth is the truth that emphasizes our effort. It's still truth, and it's much needed. The greater truth is the truth that emphasizes the role of the Eternal. Before I ever longed for the Eternal or knew that I longed for the Eternal longed for me. And was calling me. So, let's go back to this law of the universe. Without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. Without fail, no matter how long it takes, and don't forget that no matter how long it takes. Don't forget that. Without fail, every spiritual need will be met by the help of the Eternal. That's something I learned for myself in 1998-99, my year-long retreat. Because as the painful lumps of karma came up, the help of the Eternal came to meet them. And there was a direct experiencing of it. Then it was in those periods of time that happened every day when there was kind of time for quiet reflection and contemplation on the process, it was made clear over and over again. What you're experiencing exemplifies a universal truth. There is never any spiritual need. There is no scrap, iota, little bit of spiritual need that will not be met one day. The compassion and wisdom of the Eternal is going to get at all of it one day. You know, in undertaking the training that we're doing, and especially when someone becomes a monk, what we're doing is we're saying to the Eternal, have at it, and I'm willing to pay the price. I'm willing to do my payment short term rather than drag it out over, have it drag out over lifetimes. And this, I've said many times, this is the more specific meaning of becoming a monk. When you become a monk, when you were ordained, for those listening to me who are monks, whether you knew it or not, you were saying to the Eternal, in this lifetime I'm willing for all the karma remains to come due so that the Eternal can get at it, get at the need that's within it. And I'm willing to give everything, everything. Life, reputation, honor, health, wealth, everything. Maybe very few people would actually ever undergo monastic ordination if they really were conscious of this. I certainly wasn't. I've had to come to that everything over bits and pieces, some of which were hard to come to. And eventually I did come to the everything. And what a relief it is. And one has to train in the everything. Always our past karma can act upon us, can influence us. Always we can reattach and re-grab. So there's endless training. Here's what Rimaster says, some of what Rimaster says. In the fourth law of the universe, one already knows the breakage of the precepts as the cause of karma. One is trying not to make the same mistakes, what I was just saying. One is trying to do only good so that no matter how long it takes, no matter how long it takes, one is not hindering the vanquishing of evil. Note that way of putting it. One is not hindering the vanquishing of evil. We're not hindering the process of conversion. That's the very undriver's seat way of putting it. And right there, within that, one is not hindering. What is implied by that? That the Eternal is doing the work, the heavy lifting. One is not getting in the way of the Eternal. If you read River Master's commentary on the precept, it's permeated by this. Do not get in the way of the Eternal. She says, however, habits die a hard death. And there are grave temptations to try to speed up the workings of karma because we are not happy, and she underlines happy, with how long it takes. She underlines with how long it takes. I love this. This is just what we do. We can't leave well enough alone. We get impatient. We try to speed it up. And we make ourselves miserable as a result. Really miserable. And she goes on to say, this is the basis, among other things, you know, among many other things, for the catastrophe that we call our judicial system. Because what is it that people are doing when they try to punish people for evil actions? They are, as she said, you know, trying to take on the role of the eternal. And why would we do that? Because we're impatient. We have to get even. You can't let them get away with this because they're going to die and they will not have been punished. You see? Nowadays, there's this slick, I mean really slick, way in which these things are expressed. Nowadays, people don't talk about vengeance as much as they used to. You don't hear people saying, I've got to eke vengeance. I've got to get my vengeance on the person who's hurt me. Instead, they talk about accountability. But if you listen to the way in which people talk about accountability, I have not been able yet to hear people talk about it that gives me any sense that there's an iota of real difference from just plain old vengeance. They have got to suffer for what they've done. They got to pay for what they've done. That's the idea of accountability. The way it's, you know, I hear it used all the time. When I was growing up, I never heard that term used this way. It's some kind of new dogma. But it's our old friend under a new name. Punishment and vengeance. And River Master, I saw her personally train, because she got a lot of hard knocks. I saw her personally train not to go down that road over and over again, not to go down that road, not to harbor vengeance in her heart, not to wish to punish. And she always lamented the fact that our social system is so primitive and places such emphasis on exacting an eye for an eye. She says, in other words, we become impatient with the eternal and try to give him a hand at his job. She says, if one is to go further, if one is to go the whole way in training, one must practice the four wisdoms of charity, that is generosity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy, and not get annoyed or irritable at how long it takes for evil to be vanquished. I would use the word converted here, and she'd be very happy with that, by the way, and for good to prevail. She says, our job is trusting the eternal, not trying to hurry up karma. One does learn when one experiences one's own past karma, the karma from previous lives, one does learn that you don't get away with nothing. And that there is very deep suffering for very willful breakage of the precepts, for willfully doing harm. There is very deep suffering. There's very deep suffering that comes from the best of intentions, when the best of intentions is influenced by delusion, ignorance. There's one in particular, which is in my own karmic stream, that I won't say which one it was, it's one I've talked about at times. Where a very noble-hearted person, it was made clear when the memory came up, this was a very honorable, noble-hearted person. And this person chose a drastic way of going about things. Watch out for theories. he had a theory about how to stop something horrific that was happening. And he went about it with a vengeance, so to speak. The best of intentions. Well, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, the saying goes, and certainly I've suffered plenty from what I picked up from this individual. Yet they don't say that the road to heaven is paved with good intentions, but it is too. Another thing that was made really clear to me in 1998-1999, over and over again, this was right at the beginning when I was just starting to see the past life karma. It's made really clear, no matter what people do that is evil, no matter how horrific it is, no matter how wicked it is, no matter how much misery comes for others from it, it is just pain and confusion acting themselves out in the world, playing themselves out. It's just pain and confusion, pain and ignorance. This is such a liberating teaching. This is, of course, what the Buddha taught, what he found in his own enlightenment. The cause of suffering is craving rooted in ignorance. Not craving rooted in original sin. Not craving rooted in lack of Buddha nature. Craving rooted in ignorance. And that ignorance and that craving, all that pain that comes from willful action, that's all the raw material of enlightenment. It is not for me to play God and to despise it in myself or another. I sometimes point out, and sometimes I think I need it pointed out to me, how very dangerous it is spiritually to speak against oneself. We tend to think that we have a kind of a right. There's even kind of virtue to speak against ourselves and in some way to look down on ourselves. But believe me, it is no virtue and it's not true humility to speak against oneself and to despise or sneer at oneself in any way whatsoever. Do not speak against others. It can also be said, do not speak against yourself. Because when we do it, what we're doing is we're hating the self. We're hating our own selfishness. And that only makes that need that's within it more desperate. Fundamentally, that need is the need for the love of the eternal. So all it does is it makes that longing more desperate and more convinced that it's unworthy. So when we make a mistake, when we catch ourselves making a mistake, it's enough to bow and simply stop making the mistake. They all recognize, oh, that's a mistake. I don't want to continue that. And to bow and to go on. It doesn't help to sit and beat ourselves over the head. That's just more mistakes added to the original mistake. I remember when I was learning this as a young monk. And, well, I'm still learning it, but it was a kind of revelation to me. I caught myself punishing myself. I thought, well, wait a minute here. This isn't making sense. So, yes, I made a mistake, okay. Now I got to deal with the consequences of that. But now, how is punishing myself helping me do anything other than just be more miserable? And so I learned that the first place I had to grab it, if I started punishing myself, the first place I had to grab hold of my will and move it in a positive direction was to actually choose to stop belittling or punishing myself, indulging in guilt. Then I could see, well, what can I do now to about this other thing that set me off, you see? But until I could get to the point where I was not beating myself up, there was no hope of getting at that other stuff because I was just making myself more desperate. Remember, you say often, you know, a charity begins at home. Well, compassion begins, true compassion begins with having compassion for oneself and cultivating the four wisdoms in relationship to oneself. To be generous to oneself, generous with forgiveness, generous with tenderness, kindness, generous with sympathy, generous with benevolence. Now, if we bear in mind what I've said about the point of view on this law of the universe that emphasizes the role of the eternal in the process of conversion, then we can understand very readily how this law of the universe, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails, no matter how long it takes, how that relates to the fourth of the five columns, which Master refers to as the spiritual bathing, which is represented by the fountain. The fountain means that the one is experiencing the love of the eternal flowing to one, the need. Actually, the fountain means that whether one is aware of it or not, that is actually happening when we're living from the precepts. Actually, it means whether or not we're living from the precepts, that is actually happening. But the love of the eternal is always flowing to us. But that if we are willfully breaking the precepts, we block our own capacity to recognize it and to benefit from it. Really, the deeper spiritual meaning of stealing from oneself. Together, the third and fourth of the five columns, heaven penetrates earth, the third column, and spiritual bathing, the fourth column, together, they express the third of the Four Noble Truths, the cessation of suffering. And fourth of the columns, the spiritual bathing, well, really, they also both, you know, also express the Noble Eightfold Path. The fourth of the five columns and the fourth law of the universe act as kind of mirrors of the second, or somehow a complement, the second column and the second law of the universe. The spiritual washing is when we are in the position of Sangha, and we bring that which needs cleansing and conversion to the eternal, and that's the second column, and the love of the eternal meets it. And at the deepest level that happens, that can be both very vigorous and sometimes very painful. Because that's when the rest of the karma comes due in the intense karmic washing. The karmic bathing is really the continuation of the same thing, except the pain has gone out of it. And so the spiritual bathing is some degree of ecstasy or other. It can be a very quiet ecstasy. It can be also a very vigorous ecstasy. That at least is how we experience it. But again, how we feel it. But again, our experience of it isn't what makes it happen. It is. And sometimes we're aware of it, sometimes we're not. The third of the five columns, Heaven Penetrates Earth, emphasizes the teaching that is given that helps us change the course of our lives and more deeply and truly follow our hearts. The fourth of the five columns emphasizes, the spiritual bathing emphasizes the saturating of the help of the eternal to every nook and cranny of the spiritual need. It's soaking in, flowing to every nook and cranny of the need. Without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. This is good prevailing. When every bit and piece, every nook and cranny of the need is saturated with the love of the eternal, when all of the ignorance is enlightened and the heart is fixed upon the eternal at last, unshakably, then all evil is vanquished and good prevails. Again, it's a wonderful feature of River Master's teaching that she has shown these truths that we don't just have to take on faith, that we come to experience in the course of training. She's shown them in such depth through showing how they are exhibited in different teachings, in different facets, in different aspects. And how the teachings of Buddhism actually describe our actual experience. To put it another way, the teachings are proven true in our experience as we go on in training. The last thing I want to say about this particular law of the universe, I want to put a plug in for the Hitlers and the Stalins of this world. Not that I want them to get their hands on me or anyone else, but at any one time in this world there are the real big, evil, bad, and nasties, some of them, who get in a position of great power and have a real picnic wreaking havoc. And these people, I think, at all times in all civilizations, are always thought of as a kind of very personification of evil. I remember the story of a man who was in a concentration camp Jewish man who was in a concentration camp and I think was one of the witnesses at the trial of Eichmann, who was kind of the head of the Nazis concentration camp program, you might say. And this man, right, the way I was told it, was right while he was witnessing, he looked over at Eichmann, and he was shocked. I mean, shocked to the very core of his being that this man who had done such monstrous things was just looking like a very ordinary, rather pathetic human being. Rim Master used to say that we all have the potential to be Buddha. We all have the potential to be a Hitler. And it seems to me, well, I know from in my own training, that it is really important that I always recognize that I too have the potential to do what any other human being can do or has done. But there's nothing that makes me special that I don't have that potential, because I do. I have done unkind things. Well, it's just a matter of magnitude, isn't it, between one unkind act and another. I, too, have had daft ideas that I acted on and found out were really not a good idea at all, it turned out. It's just a matter of magnitude. My good idea that turned out not to be a good idea, and Eichmann's good idea, or Hitler's good idea that turned out not to be a good idea. It's just a matter of magnitude. It's not a matter of type. If we separate ourselves out from the Hitlers and the Stalins and the Jack the Rippers, that we are fundamentally different from them, we will separate ourselves out from the Buddha too. That we are fundamentally different from the Buddha. You can't do one without the other. Everyone who goes through the karmic washing at a deep level gets their nose rubbed in their own humanity with a vengeance. You find out what you're capable of. And you get a chance to be sincerely sorry for the things that you've done in this lifetime. And really not want to repeat the mistakes that people made in the past. And you get more than that. You get to actually see the fundamental, indestructible immaculacy was the true reality of that person from the past who made such mistakes and caused such suffering. And if you experience it at a very deep level, you get the opportunity to look one day upon the whole stream of karma and see not a single speck of dust. And you know that that's possible for everyone else, no matter what karma they have inherited. And you know that what another person has inherited is their business, not yours. That how they train with it is their business and not yours. Whether they go very far in the process of cleansing and conversion of karma is their business, not yours. Each man his karma makes and must carry for himself. If at the end of any of our lives there's still a mess left that needs help, needs cleaning up, well, it will find its help and its cleaning up one day. If not in this lifetime, then another. If not in this world, then another. If not in this universe, then another. The eternal is eternal. The eternal doesn't have to be in a rush. If we look upon this world at any one moment, in any one place, and we despair at the suffering, at the ignorance, and at the cruelty, then we have simply added our despair to a pile of suffering. And we have increased the suffering of the world at that moment. Whereas if we look upon the suffering, the injustice, the unkindness, the seemingly senseless cruelty with the eyes of the scripture of great wisdom, that it is void, unstained, and pure, then in that moment that we saw it in that way, in that moment that we chose to not judge and chose to not nurture despair or vengeance, then we actually not only help ourselves, but we help the whole world. Because we have taken what was presented to us in our experience of the senses as a painful mess, and we've turned a little bit of it in the direction of enlightenment. opportunity either to make merit or to create more suffering, and we've made the merit instead. And that can happen in a blink of an eye. It's a choice we make, to look down or to look up. And if you really want to look up, there's no one in the world that can make you look down. Shri Buddha, Shri Dharma, Shri Sangha.